This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The pandemic. I welcome Dr. Henry Miller, a physician, Pacific Research Institute, to comment on the late stages of the pandemic and some mysteries abounding of the mutations of the during the pandemic and what it means going forward, especially for the most vulnerable. That would be my subgroup, over 70, immunocompromised, and at the same time, lots of people who are much younger and are also immunocompromised. What does the future look like? Henry, a very good evening to you. I begin with what I read in Nature magazine. This is the peer-reviewed, top-of-the-pile science magazine for Europe, equal to Science in the United States. The question asked, within days, why does the Omicron subvariant spread faster than the original? Subhead, early studies suggest that BA2, it's called BA.2, lineage might prolong the Omicron wave, but won't necessarily cause a fresh surge of COVID infections. We all knew when that the Omicron hit in December, there was going to be a surge of positives and a surge of concern about pressing the hospitals. I believe it did not happen. I'm not sure because I haven't read it up on the most recent summary. But now there's BA2. Is this alarm bells like BA1? Good evening to you, Henry.
Good evening, John. Well, the terminology is a little confusing. If it were up to me, I probably would have designated BA2 as a new variant. It has lots and lots of mutations, fully as many as going from the original Wuhan virus to Alpha. But semantics aside, it's not tremendously different from BA1, the Omicron that's been around for several months. It is more transmissible, about 30% more transmissible, which could be due to a number of characteristics. It could be that it replicates more rapidly, and so the viral load in the nasal passages of people who are infected is higher, and therefore they're able to spread an infectious dose more readily. It could be that they attach to receptors in the upper respiratory tract with more avidity, or that they enter cells more easily. Could be a number of things. The good news is that BA2 does not appear to cause more severe, more virulent disease than BA1. And there's some confusion as yet about whether it is better able to evade immunity caused by either previous infection with some variant or immunity conferred by vaccination. It seems not to be excessively able to evade immunity. One thing that's of interest, though, is in Denmark, where BA2 has virtually taken over, about 90% of the sequenced virus there is BA2. There hasn't been a surge, but there has been an attenuation of the decline. In other words, in most places, Omicron is diminishing very rapidly. Cases are falling very rapidly. But in Denmark, that fall has been attenuated, has been more gradual than it had been before BA2 came along. So that's sort of where we are now. I would remind you, though, that SARS-CoV-2 is very mutable. It mutates very rapidly. And the more cases there are in the U.S. and worldwide, the more mutants we get and the more opportunities for Darwinian evolution to test it for fitness. That is to have it exhibit even worse properties than we've seen with the previous variants.
Henry, is there anything surprising about these iterations of the virus, Alpha, Delta, Omicron, B1, Omicron, B2. Is that logical from our studies of viruses?
The characteristic that is predominant is that it's unpredictable. Darwinian evolution looks for fitness. And in this case, it's primarily transmissibility, because the virus doesn't obtain any advantage from killing its host. In fact, quite the contrary. It's most advantageous to the virus if it's highly transmissible and if there's a long asymptomatic period between infection and the appearance of symptoms, so that the host can spread it around, such as at super spreader events, for example.
The immunocompromised, I want to focus on those because you've identified an article in Atlantic Magazine. I recommend to people who have questions about being older, which is what I am, or being immunocompromised. I was surprised to see 3% of the population. That's much larger than I would have thought. And these are people with arthritis or lupus, other diseases that plague them. They live with, but plague them. The observation of the piece suggests that the virus is always going to be with us, and that guarding against this is necessary for the immunocompromised. Or am I being too general, Henry? Can we be more specific about the warning?
Well, you characterize that very well. And that 3% of adults in the U.S. Corresponds to about 7 million people. And in addition to those who are on chemotherapy or radiotherapy, or who are taking immunosuppressants for rheumatoid arthritis or lupus and similar diseases, there are also a large number of people who are taking steroids, glucocorticoids like cortisone or prednisone, who are also temporarily immunosuppressed during the time that they're taking those drugs. So it's a very large number of people. And those people are going to continue to be vulnerable, as you said, even as we hope the pandemic will begin to wane. And then we encounter an interesting societal moral dilemma. It's how much do others who are not immunosuppressed owe the immunosuppressed in terms of protecting them from exposure to the virus, with all sorts of the non-pharmaceutical interventions. And what does society, in formulating its policies and rules, owe the immunosuppressed? And I think a good analogy is what the Americans with Disabilities Act guarantees to people who are disabled in some way. It requires that there be quote-unquote reasonable accommodation to their disabilities. And what this would be in terms of in terms of protections from COVID-19 is a matter of policy. And so it could be a continuation of mask requirements, mask mandates on public transportation and in other settings, movie theaters and so on, that people could readily be exposed to an infectious dose of the virus.
Dr. Henry Miller, the Pacific Research Institute. This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.